Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 134 for December 10th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Lisa Salinger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
You kind of scared me for a minute there, Lisa. I was thinking maybe you were a little unsure of who you... It's because you did Serospectives last night. That's what it is.
It could be that. Could be I was waiting for Joe to go first. Could be I just had a brainless moment.
I would never do such a thing.
That is always not the place that I always bring up the caboose of this train. Wait a minute, that sounds worse.
I did have a brainless moment.
No, that sounds much worse. I just realized that analogy doesn't work and actually proved some people on the internet right. So wait, I won't do that. That's probably bad.
It's not often that we headline this podcast with a story about the Amazon Kindle. It's actually been quite a while since we've done such a thing, I think. But this week, we're going to do it for a couple of reasons that are rather fascinating, actually, in my opinion. The first is that NFB has an informational protest planned for December 12th, which is on a Wednesday, at the headquarters of Amazon. And basically, this has to do with the fact that Amazon is introducing WhisperCast into the schools and wanting all of their devices to be in schools. And guess what? They're not accessible to blind people. Or so we thought. Right, Lisa?
Absolutely. I mean, you can read a novel, but it's really not a suitable format for students because they can't spell a word. They can't look up a word. They can't go back a paragraph or two. And if the teacher is using a textbook and wants to go in a different order and she says, okay, class, open your books to chapter 15 or navigate on your Kindles to chapter 15, the blind student is not going to be able to do that given the present level of functionality.
That and what is a Kindle? Is Kindle the app on my iPhone? Is Kindle the app on my Android? Is Kindle Fire or like your Kindle keyboard that you have, Lise? I mean, that's the problem that muddies the water here is that they have to define what Kindle they're pushing for in the classroom. And they have to, I don't know, acknowledge accessibility of some kind for a lot more people than blind people, in fact, in order to make that work. And how do you do that when you're sitting here phasing out some products and promoting others and relying on the accessibility technology as we spoke in last week's 133 to do the heavy lifting for you? You know, I mean, it's a very muddy situation. What has probably worked in our favor more than anything else is that everybody is at the party but them. Like we discussed last week on the show, you've got, you know, Google Books, iBooks, you have all these things like the Nook coming on board. More than any protest and more than any of us jumping up and down and just going crazy at Amazon, the fact that mainstream pressure is kicking in and the fact that they have this glaring omission when everybody else has come along to the party is probably going to do more for us to get them to bow to pressure than any major protest. But it's still good to protest. I'm not saying advocacy doesn't work. That's not what I'm saying. It's just that mainstream pressure looks much, much better at making somebody look, you know, bad than this.
Well, all I can say is three words. Ricky was right. She said last week on this very podcast that Amazon was going to take some of the existing accessibility that's already in the Android, you know,
right,
OS.
The ice cream sandwich, right?
Yes.
That it's based off of.
And claim accessibility. And by golly, if that's not just exactly what they've done this week, talking about the fact that, hey, we have some Explore by Touch and some voice control built into our, it's already there. It's not coming. It's already there. So they say.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And as I said, and as Ricky also claimed above me, is that when they moved to Jelly Bean, all of a sudden, you know what? It's been even more drastically improved.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
We heard what you were saying and we made it better. Yeah, not exactly. You know, it's still the fact that, okay, even if you say that, all right, even if you say that this is what we're doing and this is, we have this kind of accessibility, that doesn't stop all the other platforms that you're on. You're not exactly improving it for those people. Oh, wait, remember the fun of Kindle PC?
How is that Android accessibility going to work on your iPhone or your iPad?
That's my point. Mm-hmm. You're multi-platform, you know? So, again, are you telling everybody now to get the best experience as a disabled user? You need to go and get this Kindle Fire thing. Gosh, that seems kind of weird, too.
You know, I'm not the guy that's likely to be out on a picket line a lot, to be honest with you. But I say march on in FB. March on. Let's show up next Wednesday.
It doesn't hurt. It certainly doesn't hurt.
No.
And if nothing else, it will generate press that will then put more pressure on Amazon to do the right thing, because they can only spin this their way, you know, for so much. They're not going to get the mileage out of that, because there are people who can demonstrate, okay, this doesn't work and this doesn't work, and you have no way for it to work with Braille, for example.
And the irony is they brought it to the forefront. They did it. Amazon's the one that brought up the topic.
Yep. Well, and that's probably due to pressure, because everybody else is there. Again, the cheese stands alone. So, you know, it because now everybody else is doing it. And again, that's why I said it's so much more pressure now to show that they're the ones who are omitting this conversation, because so many others are doing it. And so at some point, either through public pressure or through embarrassment or through the sheer fact that they're the only ones not doing it, really puts them in a really nasty spot. And education and government do have, you know, 504 and 508. At some point, they're going to have to deal with it. Apple did. Now it's time for Amazon.
Well, talking about moving forward, doing things, being innovative, we have an article here from Blind Bargains. They announced the winners of the 2011 Access Awards. And they started out by apologizing. They were just a tad late. Hey, it happens. You get busy.
We would know nothing about that at this network.
No,
that never happened. No.
No.
Anybody who does creative things like podcasting or doing award shows, no, we feel for you. No. We understand.
Yes, going to conventions, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, no.
But it's been released. And guess what? Little old Sarotalk, for the second year in a row, won top podcast or radio show.
Yay!
That is thanks to the listeners, I'm saying. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. We owe you guys a lot, and it means a lot to us to have that. And all the people who write in or leave us iReports or talk about us on Twitter or promote us or fill out the podcast survey, because that does help us, or leave your rating in iTunes. All of that helps us, and not just us. It helps out other podcasts that we reference here. It helps out other services that we talk about here. Again, rising tide lifts all boats. We say it all the time. And so we appreciate you listening and talking to others and promoting us and using iBlink, because that just advances the cause for everybody. Even if you don't like all of our shows, or even if you don't listen to every Sarotalk, you know, the fact that you're helping us promote blindness and mainstream products and get that word out is a big thing for us. Even if you just read the show notes, we still appreciate you for it.
We're in good company too. Independent Living Aids, GW Connect, won awards. So, hey, good stuff.
Yeah, all winners. And we have a link in the show notes in case you want to see more of who won and how that worked out. JJ, of course, over at Blind Bargains, is a host over on That Android Show. And, you know, if you got a moment and you're looking for some holiday deals, you probably want to check out Blind Bargains or AT Guys as well. So there is some wonderful stuff. If you follow them on Twitter, you can actually probably be broke in about 2 or 3 days, because they put out some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got great, great info on deals. And they also have an app for both Android and iOS. So check out the Blind Bargains app.
I referenced GW Micro a second ago with GW Connect, but those folks have been busy as well. They just released WindowEye 8.0 this week. And man, have they done a lot of work on that product. Overhauled browse mode, included Aria, has Windows 8 support, Java accessibility support, Windows Safe Mode. If you need to boot into Safe Mode, you can use WindowEye in that experience. WindowEye Mobile. You can go up and plug a thumb drive into a computer and use WindowEye. And probably the coolest feature of all is the ability to unmute your volume if and when said button ever gets pressed. Who hasn't done that at some point?
And also Jeremy Curry did one of our Windows 8 specials in the month of November where he talked about WindowEye and how it worked with Windows 8. You can find that on serotalk.com. Also, Jeremy is one of our hosts of High Contrast, along with Maury Hill from AI Squared and Rodney from Tech Access Weekly. And the last two episodes of High Contrast have been really, really neat in that we focused on Jeremy's song, which was a song that a lady wrote about Jeremy for being inspired by his blindness as she was learning to deal with her vision loss. And Maury talks about her stem cell trials very bravely and is going to keep us up to date on what she's going through as she looks into this in order to maintain the vision that she has. So if you haven't listened to High Contrast, I can't say enough about that show. It has been very interesting to have the conversations we have over on that show. And it's not just about low vision. It is a lot about adjusting to lack of sight and what's happening to the individual. So again, check that out as well as the Windows 8 podcast special.
As someone who's totally blind, I would really recommend that you check out High Contrast as well. I think often there's been a division, you know, the us versus them, the partials versus the totals or whatever. But you'll find that a lot of the issues that they cover are things that you also are experiencing. At least that's what I have found. Also, as I try to understand technology better and just my world in general better, I often realize how many things there are about vision, about sight, that I don't know. And so this podcast is just a really good source of information. When the first one came out, I thought, well, I'll give this a try. And I've been hooked. I may not need all the information. I may not even understand some of it. But a lot of it I do. And I think the basic human experience or human condition and the whole thing of adjustment and others' attitudes is something that we can all relate to. So if you're into learning a bit and you want to try something new and you don't have any sight, I'd still recommend that you check out High Contrast.
It surprises me sometimes when we do these podcasts and Joe isn't on one of them because as a low vision person, he kind of bridges that gap. Sometimes a sighted person doesn't even realize what a blind person doesn't know. But someone with low vision can say, hey, I know that, you know, you can't see that screen. And so you're kind of not aware of this, but let me give you a heads up on something that's visual here that voiceover or whatever isn't picking up on. So it's invaluable for us to work together. iWork for iOS is now updated. I've not played with this. I don't know, Lisa, if you've had a chance or Joe to use the product at all.
I've always wanted to buy it.
I never have. Yeah. I kind of felt like if I need to compose a document, for the most part, I'll do that on my computer. That's not really what I use my phone for.
Right.
I could. I just haven't. I already use it for so many things.
Well, I'm just thinking ahead.
I'm wondering. Mac, but yeah, I don't,
that's where I was going,
for iOS. Yeah. And it's kind of like one of those things that you normally get with Macs anyway, because sometimes I kind of bundle it very, very affordably. Right. In older Macs, of course, now you kind of sort of have to get it from the Mac App Store because I don't believe it's available in boxed copies anymore in Apple stores. I may not be completely right on that, but I believe that's correct, that later versions of iWork are hard to find on disk. But it's great that one of the things that also is coming with this is a little bit of compatibility with Microsoft Office because the I would say probably, Jamie, you would probably get this from TripleClick Home, is the lack of ability to interact with Office documents on the Mac or iOS would be one of the big hurdles to anybody wanting to adopt VoiceOver full time for almost anything and everything. Right. So the fact that this is coming around, like the Nook, I mean, in the last 2 weeks, man, a couple of big time barriers for Apple users are starting to really change.
Absolutely. And this is definitely going to be something to watch in the next couple of months and yeah, to talk about on TripleClick Home. And
yeah, I'd be interested to see what Pete has to say, because chances are he's playing around with this buddy too to some respect. So definitely keep your ear to the ground to TripleClick Home and see what they have to say about this. It might take a little bit of time for us to play around with it, but it's definitely exciting.
I have a video from Apple talking about VoiceOver functionality and how it works. I actually didn't watch the video, but I looked at some of the comments, and it was kind of interesting because one of the top comments, someone said, "You're missing the point. It isn't for you. It's for blind people." So apparently someone must have said, you know, "What do we need that? That's stupid. And what's that purpose of that?" Again, sighted people are starting to understand, are starting to get it. And I think that's as important as the technology itself, as the fact that we can use the product, is that it's something finally. You know, I probably told this story before, but I knew a guy that was a big-time computer programmer, and he made megabucks and tons of money. And I said something about screen reading technology, and he immediately started talking about voice dictation, like Dragon or something like that. He had no clue. He had no concept of what I was talking about. And that's been several years ago.
Yeah, I get that all the time. And if it's somebody that I know well, you know, I've been able to kind of say, okay, use your common sense here.
Right.
Do my hands work? Well, then I can type, but what can't I do? And then they kind of get it. You can't read it. Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's kind of my thought. This is a good video as far as it goes. I think he was demonstrating using the iPhone 3. And so I'd really like to see something of this caliber done where they're demonstrating VoiceOver and not too heavy just for general education, comparing and contrasting it to Siri, because a lot of sighted people say, you know, well, now it makes sense to me why you can use the iPhone, because it has that Siri. And until a couple days ago, I didn't have an iPhone that had Siri on it.
So how's that working out now? What do you think?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
I didn't hate Siri. But I really had negative feelings about it before even using it, which is not always a good way to go. But I thought, you know, so many people are acting like this is the be-all and end-all. And some blind people are saying, well, now I'll get an iPhone because it has Siri. And there are times where you may not want to talk to your phone.
Right.
And there may be things that you can't do. For example, I was trying to think up use cases the other night, and I asked something about what's on TV tonight. And it said, I don't currently do TV listings.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
But, and you know, I've played with Siri on other people's iPhones. And I really, I mean, after you ask it to search for something, and after you ask it a stupid question and tell it a stupid joke or ask it to tell you a stupid joke, it feels like there's nothing more you can do with it. But really, when you're dealing with your contacts, and the things that you use the most. This was kind of cool. One of the stories that you linked to, there was like a sidebar. Or no, I'm sorry, something I saw on Twitter. Anyway, they all meld. There was a thing this morning I saw about using Siri as a tip calculator. And I thought, ha, I beat you to that. I thought of that. I didn't see it online. And it works very well, although it's really very funny because it gives you, okay, this is for 15%. This is for 16%. This is for 18%. If you want to leave an 11.3% tip, you know, like it just gives you tons of information. But I also, the other thing with Siri is that I'm realizing, I mean, I could explain it, but I'm realizing kind of where it counts about app integration. I've used other dictation style apps, and you dictate your message, and then there are all these options. You know, you can tweet it, you can send it as a text, you can send it to Facebook. And that's fine. But the other night, I was texting back and forth with my dad, actually, and he sent me a message, and I went to reply to it. And there was the dictate button. And I thought, no way. You can do this within the app. I mean, I knew it, but actually experiencing it was different. And so far, I've used it mostly in quiet areas, but it's been very accurate. One of the things I told him was that a local restaurant, Fresno's, had gone out of business. And it spelled Fresno's right. You know, it was smart enough to take the sounds and say, okay, this may not be a word in my dictionary, but I think this is what you meant. So, you know, still a bit of learning, but I think the uses for Siri are as varied as the people who use it. And there will be times where I won't. I mean, you have to, if you're typing a message, you can kind of type and think as you go. If you're going to dictate, you kind of have to have it thought out ahead. And so I'm not always good at that. So those are some differences that I'm noticing.
Give your phone a couple of good shakes and you can undo dictation. That is the coolest feature ever, when it just isn't getting it right and you either have to abort the message or, but if you just shake it a couple of times, you can undo. I've had my phone 8 months and I still don't think to use Siri. Sometimes I will go the long way around or the clumsier way of doing something. It's like, silly, why don't you just say call, you know, my wife mobile?
You know, I'm always going to... My contacts are disastrous.
Yeah.
And so before I can call with Siri, I've got to clean up my contacts because some are in their first name last and last name first. I mean, I might end up calling China if I'm
not
careful.
That's a great point. Actually, I hadn't thought of that because it will get it wrong. It will, absolutely. In fact, it happened to me a couple days ago. So the better that you keep your phone organized and keep your contacts in order... And this is probably, I'm sure this is true on the Android platform as well, and Joe can attest to this. If you're really going to use this stuff, you do have to not be sloppy about how you keep track of things.
And don't link it to Facebook, because Facebook...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because there goes your contacts list right out the window, especially if you don't call those people or text those people, and you have to... jump through some hoops, you know, by going into the settings of the Facebook app and telling it not to do this and ignore that, and then still going through and deleting some stuff after you do it. In fact, I've gotten to the point where, because Facebook is kind of bundled on my phone in Verizon land, I actually have gone in and sort of left Facebook alone, but I logged out of Facebook on the phone. So now it's not really talking to the operating system anymore. I'm still updating it because I'm afraid that of any security hole where Facebook gets attacked and they come back in another way. But I don't let it share anything or look at anything on my phone anymore, because it was just getting kind of crazy in that some of the pictures for my contacts were getting reassociated through Facebook. So when I turned it off, I actually lost some of the pictures for people that I already had assigned pictures to. And I was like, okay, I don't like that file association. That's kind of nasty. And I don't know if that was like part of the app where it updated the picture because I gave it permission to update a Facebook status profile. Mm-hmm. So it gets really weird when we're talking about cross-app integration. There are some things that you don't think that could talk back and forth because the iPhone and other parts of iDevices do kind of sort of section things off. You don't really think about what it does have the ability to do until you go in there and start really playing with settings. And if you haven't, remember that you have to go into settings on your iDevice and then swipe downwards in the application sometimes to be able to get to the particular settings that are in that app. And it's different than actually going into the app and looking for a settings button or drop down.
Yeah, they don't make it easy necessarily.
No, they don't always.
No. Android land, it can get very difficult to do some of that, but it depends on what you're doing. I, years ago, had a conversation with TV Ramen, and TV at Google kind of sort of said, look, the best way to approach Google search is to think of it in very direct computer terms. I've talked about this on the show before, but the way that Apple approaches things with Siri and Wolfram Alpha, which is a part of what Siri is based off of, is that it's like talking to the droids in Star Wars, like talking to C-3PO or R2-D2, where you're having a conversation. But with Google products at this time, it seems that the experience is designed around the Star Trek computer, you know, Earl Grey tea hot, that kind of way. And if you approach it from the kind of engineer mathematical perspective and ask questions to Google in that way, you get really well-tailored search results. Google now changes that. There's a little bit more conversation contextual parts to Google now in Jelly Bean, which makes searching really easy. And some latest updates, I can actually read more of the web searches where I couldn't just a couple of weeks ago, as I said on the show. The latest Google updates, I'm actually seeing a lot more of the searches through Google now, which is awesome. But you don't have the conversational thing that you have with Siri. You know, it is very much input-output. It's not like kind of the cutesy dialogue-y thing that Siri is. And again, that's just the way that the experience is different from one platform to another. But you do have more app integration.
Yeah. The whole cutesy dialogue, as you put it, thing. And I know what you're saying there.
Yeah,
I mean, personal assistant. All you got to do is say to Siri, knock, yeah, knock, and you get this whole, you know, mm-hmm, spiel about knock-knock jokes. But
or ask it the plot of 2001 A Space Odyssey, and she tells you it's about misunderstood, you know, a misunderstood computer that was aborted through humans getting in its way kind of thing. I mean, there's some stuff that's programmatically put in there to have you work with Siri and have a different feeling about that as a personal assistant, which is what it's marketed as. But have you guys, anecdotally, have you guys run into more of the, she sits there for 3 minutes and then comes back and says, you know, ask me again, or, you know, because I still run into people with iPhone 5s who hit server load on Siri. So even with the faster processor and all of that, sometimes she'll just go into space and not come back.
I haven't yet.
I don't see that much at all. And it may be where I live. I'm in a less congested area. I don't know. I mean, I have seen it. It's not that I will see it if I know I'm in a place where I don't have the greatest signal. That's where I'll notice it. But in just general daily use, I really don't see much of that at all.
The thing that surprises me is the fact that it can be conversational. Like if you say, what's the weather in Boston? And it tells you, and then you could say, how about Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm.
And it will kind of take the context of the previous question and get you the weather for Philadelphia, where the older computer sort of algorithms might come back and say, what about Philadelphia? I don't understand your question.
Yeah.
Well, we've got an article here that talks about Android versus Apple 1 year later. And certainly for us, that's a dual conversation because there's the actual platforms themselves and the hardware that we could have in a regular conversation like we're having now about Siri and Google now. And then there's the access part of it, which is, you know, voiceover is improved in iOS 6 and certainly, oh my gosh, in the last month or so for Android 4.2, light years different than previous versions of TalkBack and Access. So in the last year, as we're getting ready to do this year in AT, especially on all our shows, it is crazy to think about the conversations that we had pre-episode Sarah Talk 91 versus where we are today. And it's why we always keep reiterating on this podcast is that the experience and the stories we're going to talk about today, the problems in access that we're going to talk about today, just almost seem inconsequential a year later because it's just moving at such a rapid pace.
Brian Hartgen just bought an iPad and he wrote a blog post about that experience. One of the things he mentioned that I've heard other people say is that typing on the touchscreen really is more like typing on a physical keyboard because of the size of the device.
The layout,
you can actually kind of do that a little bit. So kind of interesting.
The last 3 weeks, I've helped people who have purchased iPad minis because there was a thought that they were just like the iPhone, that they would make a really quick transition over and it's the same thing across and all of that. And they weren't prepared for the fact that the iPad has its own kind of apps. You know, there are iPad apps, there are universal iPad apps, and then there are just iPhone apps that you have to double the size in order to have that go full screen on your iPad because they were designed for iPhone. So a lot of people who transition into the iPad find it a little different because flicking is not exactly the same if you're in an iPad app. They may have changed things to drop-down menus that were not the same on the iPhone. They may have to be careful not to hit the 2X button, because if you're going to do screen discovery, it doesn't take up the whole screen if you hit that by accident, because it makes it iPhone size on a big, you know, 9-inch screen. And it is a little different in the way that they do settings and layout. And of course, sometimes hardware is way different. Things you might expect to be on the iPhone are not there on the iPad. That would be a proximity sensor. So if you use that to kind of, you know, quiet speech, or if you have your own ways of doing things, when you jump to the iPad, that isn't there. So you have to find other ways to make it stop talking when you want it to stop talking. And I think it's important because we've gotten in, you know, calls before and questions before about why should I look at an iPad, you know, and that's something, you know, you have to answer, you know, if you truly want an iPad. But in a family situation, it's very, you know, normal for some families to have an iPad that they share around and iPhones amongst the family, or that they have, you know, iPhones for mom and dad, but an iPad for those younger individuals. And knowing the difference between the devices and knowing the difference between the operating system and how it handles, and knowing that one app is not the same app on all platforms, is important, because it isn't just jumping from one to the other. And when you're working to help somebody, you have to stop and help them understand that, you know, no, it's not like that on the iPhone, and vice versa. You know, last year we had talked about Netflix was broken, and it was broken for me on the iPad. And everybody on Twitter was saying, no, no, it's working fine. I don't know what your problem is, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it was because the iPhone version of Netflix wasn't broken with VoiceOver yet. Then they did, and then they fixed it. But yet the iPad one was broken the entire time. It didn't get fixed until the summer, as Jamie has heard me lament countless times before. So now I've said it on the podcast. I don't have to tell that story anymore. But, you know, it's important that people realize that, you know, when someone is telling you that something is broken in VoiceOver, it's really important that you actually ask them, okay, are you on an iPad mini? Are you on an iPad? Are you on an iPhone? Are you on an iPhone 4? What version of iOS are you using? Because all of that does play into it now, whereas before we didn't have that problem.
I think a lot of people are having problems with the fact that there are so many accessible options now. Just in Apple, you've got the iPad and the iPad mini, and you've got the iPhone and the iPod Touch. And I'm sure that there are people listening now who think, well, I don't need, you know, why should I get this? You know what? If it's causing you worry, if it's causing you stress, don't. It's just that there are various options for various people. Now, if somebody gave me, or if I won an iPad, you know, way cool, it's a new tech toy, I can learn about the differences. But I don't really, at least at this point, I've learned to never say never, but at this point, I really don't see myself purchasing it because I don't need it. You know, I can use a Bluetooth keyboard if I want. I have Flexi. I have various options for inputting information. Plus, I have small hands, so typing isn't, I don't think, as big of a deal as it would be for a guy or somebody with larger hands who needs that extra space. You know, and like I said, I have no sight, so the screen isn't a big deal. Although, if I had to navigate and analyze a lot of web tables and understand their layout visually, it might be something I would consider. You know, and yeah, we have so many exciting options, and it's kind of been discouraging because I've seen stuff on Twitter like, well, I don't like this, and I don't think it's necessary. And it's very disheartening because it may not be necessary for you, but it might be necessary for somebody else. We got into a really interesting discussion on Sarah Spectives last night about the iPad mini and how that popularity has taken off and the kinds of people that are using it. And some of those are older people, for example, with hand tremors who need and want a lighter device.
Well, the irony of that is that had Android not gone into the 7-inch tablet range to put pressure on Apple to have the need to be there, Steve Jobs was the one who had said, I don't like 7 inches. I don't like that form factor. We designed the iPad to be this. And that's kind of important because as we have an article here that Tim Cook is talking about what changes he's made since Steve has left, there is a lot more flexibility now in Apple. And some will say that that's probably not good, because it'll lead to confusion and fragmentation and cannibalization, which, by the way, Apple has always wanted to do. I mean, you know, there are multiple versions of the iPod Touch. People said, what is the point of the shuffle? And Apple proved it over time. No, you really kind of want this. So you have to go from the standard of, if you're in that ecosystem, you're willing to trust and believe that these decisions were made for the right reasons. And now that people are turning around and calling the mini the real iPad, you know, says a lot, because that was not initially what it was, you know, meant to be. And again, we've talked about that on the show before, about how my opinion is that they weren't sure if it was going to sell or not. So that's why they kind of sort of did the new iPad thing to the iPad mini. And oh man, have we gotten responses from people who hate that I've said that. But I'm sorry, it's true. You know, Apple tests things out on their first generation. And there are differences between these devices. And more than anything else, when they go to phase out a product, they're going to phase out the iPad 2. History has shown this. And when they do it, you know, when you buy anything that's based on the iPad 2 or the iPad 2 architecture, you're buying a product that you already know is obsolete in Apple's philosophy. It's just how long will they support it? And that's a big question as they start to make these huge, huge moves with the iPhone 5 and the new iPads and the Lightning connector, the A6 processor, and all of that. You know, there will come a time where Apple wants you to buy the next iPad. And that'll be when they kick the other one off the island.
Yeah, I think in defense of Apple, though, there isn't any developer who makes a product probably who doesn't discover that the user base finds things to do with it that they hadn't foreseen. And I realize sure. There's a bunch of smart people there. But sure. Like, I found it fascinating that Shane was talking about the fact that women a lot of times will buy the mini because it fits in the purse. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I hadn't thought of such a thing. But, and I realize there are smaller tablets in Android as well. But, you know, there again.
Think about this. More than 60%, I mean, most of the money that is made by major developers, and there are about 25 of them in the App Store, is mostly games. And some of those games have been designed for the bigger iPad. You know, the developers will have to think about, does some of that stuff work in the 7-inch tablet range? They're the guys who are getting a lot of the money, and they're the guys who are generating 30% for Apple. So there's going to be a user base kind of change. And will the developers kind of sort of develop games now for that 7-inch form factor? And it doesn't sound like it's that big a deal, but it is resolution-wise and all of that. And getting past accessibility for a moment, because traditionally we're not the audience for that, but understanding that those are the things that make the next iPad. Those are the things that drive you know, to have a bigger graphics processor chip in the next iPad, or to have more memory in the next iPad. How does that affect us? Well, more memory makes VoiceOver run better when you're having multiple apps open. So all of that does factor into it. We can't ignore that when the app developers work with Apple and say, our next experience is going to be better if we have all of this. And Apple goes, yeah, you're right. That does affect us in the chain. So like Lisa was saying a second ago, we can't always ignore these types of things, especially in the mainstream, that, okay, that doesn't affect me because I don't use it. Yeah, it does, because a whole bunch of other people do, and what they want will be in the next product. And if it benefits us in the sideline, awesome.
More food for thought. Send us a message or an email, resources@sarotalk.com. Leave an iReport on your iOS or Android device. We'd love to hear from you. Well, Joe, you mentioned this Tim Cook interview. He explained some of the biggest changes that he's made to Apple. One of the things that we've talked about is that it's more charitable, giving a little more money away.
Yep, that's awesome.
A little more dividends. Transparent. Yes. I mean, he says, you know, we're talking about how our supply chain works and that sort of thing. We're willing to discuss that. Also, Apple's going to start making some Macs in the USA. I started walking around, instead of singing Born in the USA, I was singing Made in the USA. I won't do a rendition of that for you on this podcast, but...
Well, it's better than the line that they used to have up there, which was designed in Cupertino, you know, which yes. kind of sounded weird. But I mean, that's awesome. I mean, anything that's coming back, there does seem to be a shift in production now. There was a thought that that kind of stuff was going to move out of China to more places like Brazil or the Ukraine. But there was a thing I saw on Bloomberg, which I thought was really interesting, was that they felt like the American worker was 33% more productive than others. And there does seem to be kind of a global shift to coming back to what we do in the United States in how we produce and what we manufacture. So, you know, that's awesome. And it's great to be able to say that kind of stuff and have, you know, Foxconn and Tim realize that, because, you know, by the time they go ahead and box it and ship it over here, it was just as fast to go ahead and ship it here.
So if we had a Ricky was right moment at the beginning of the podcast, we have a Joe is right moment coming up right here.
Uh-oh. Well, talking about people reaching for their fast forward buttons right this second. Yep. So T-Mobile announced that they are getting the iPhone, which is kind of cool. They haven't talked exactly how that's going to work out just yet, but they have acknowledged that the iPhone is coming to T-Mobile, and that it's probably going to be a version of the iPhone 5 that is like the Sprint one, because T-Mobile doesn't have a large 4G LTE, whatever you want to call it, this week presence. So that's kind of great in that, okay, all right, iPhone. But also what came out of this conversation with the guys over at T-Mobile was that they are approaching this from the idea of you could buy possibly that new iPhone for $99 up front, but they'll break out the rest of the payments for that iPhone over the next couple of months of your bill. That's not $300. That's $649. You're technically buying the phone unsubsidized, and you're paying for it throughout the lifetime of your bill. Right. Like we
one article
said,
I saw talked about $15 to $20 a month for 20 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's not horrible. I mean, I realize it's still a lot of money, but it doesn't feel like it.
Right. But again, it's do you feel in 15 to 20 months that you got to have the iPhone 35, you know?
It's I'm not sure about trade-in
values. He did say that it's going to be fair market trade-in value and credit up. So if you did feel like you wanted to move to the next iPhone or the next Android phone or the next phone, you'll have that too. But of course, that is going to be set by them possibly as what they feel is the fair value. And in other words, you're not going to come out on the good side of this per se.
You're not.
Not at all.
Right. Because, and is it a death of a thousand cuts? Because let's take, for instance, when I upgraded to my Droid 4, I got 4G love in that I had to pay $10 more to be able to access the LTE network, and I really didn't have much of a choice. In other words, Verizon raised my bill by $10 because I jumped from one phone to another. And since one phone carrier does this, they set the precedent. Everybody else tends to follow after a while. Therefore, and I'm not accusing that T-Mobile will do this, I'm just saying anecdotally from what's happened in the other carriers, what you could have is this for your data fee, or this to add another device to that data fee, and this, the this, the this, oh, and the $15 for that iPhone 7. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you aren't going to do that again. If you stay with that plan, when you do move to the iPhone 7, then again, you're paying for that thing up front and then paying off things bit by bit by bit by bit. So you have to make the decision if that works for you financially. What it does kind of sort of start to strike the death knell of is that you're paying $300 for a $645 phone, technically, that the carrier's paid for. And the carriers kind of make up that $345 throughout the lifetime of your contract. That has good and that has bad, but it's up to the individual. And what it might do is it might slow you down from jumping to the next phone. You might hold on to that phone 6 months, 8 months, 9 months longer, which then plays into some of the access features or even bugs in the operating system. You won't be able to get around them until you move to the next phone or the next operating system. So it does affect accessibility.
Yeah, that was my situation, because really I was very reluctant to let my iPhone 4 go because it was working and why spend the money? But I find more and more lately with app upgrades and iOS upgrades that VoiceOver was beginning to stutter. And that's not real helpful when you're trying to get information and to get it sometimes quickly. You know, so it's kind of sticky sometimes knowing when to upgrade and when not to, when you've kind of hit that wall.
Yeah. If it means that you can get out of the contract lock-in, that's great. You know, if it means that you're out, but if you do decide to get out, do you have to pay for the rest of that phone? I mean, there's still a lot of questions to be answered, but this does seem to fall in with the information that I was hearing this time last year from a lot of the sources, either it be through CTIA or CES or just through chatter on some of the mobile blogs, that the carriers really, really wanted out of subsidized contracts by 2013. So it doesn't mean that everybody's doing this. This isn't Katie bar the door, but it is a moment in which things could change, or they not. But, you know, speaking as someone who had to change his contract from unlimited to the shared plan when my wife upgraded her phone, you know, slowly but surely, unless you want to jump carriers, this is kind of what they're all going to do.
Well, we've discussed access technology and Apple, and quite a lot of Apple. After the break, Microsoft, and much more.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover SamNet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use SamNet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about SamNet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the Accessibility Anywhere people.
Welcome back to Serotalk 134. And, you know, we had a couple of comments about the Surface last week and Windows 8 as a whole. And, you know, depending on which blog you read, at the time of day that you read it, in the day that you read it, if it's raining or not, you will hear that Surface is doing great or Surface is doing terrible. Or if you really hate somebody for Christmas, buy them Windows 8. it's interesting that the conversation on this keeps changing so radically. But the thing that is true and the thing that is normal for Windows is that people tend to change their opinions about Windows over time, and that it always takes a little bit of time. And you can't judge it by its release schedule. The same way that you can't say, oh, I don't think I like the iPhone 5, and then people hold it and they go, it's magical! You had no idea until you held the iPhone 5 how great it is. Well, same thing here. Except people still tend to hate the start screen, and that seems to be universal. But million Surfaces sold so far. It's hard to argue with a million, so that's a good news. And as Surface Pro starts rolling in, and by the way, just to confuse you again, Surface Pro is the one that does Windows Desktop as well as the Windows Store, as opposed to the regular old Surface, which just does the Windows Store and runs on ARM chips. Okay, you caught up? Good. Okay. That things will change again because there are different units coming out. And again, as we heard on our latest Serospectives, people will just get Windows 8 when they buy the next computer. And that's how most people do it. So this is more for the course. But what isn't for the course is that if you decide to thumb your nose at an institution, you know, like, I don't know, Cupertino or, I don't know, Android, and do a whole big social media campaign where you're going to make fun of something, you got to be prepared for the internet to be the internet. In other words, the hunter becomes the hunted, huh, Jamie?
Yes, yes. Let's bash Android and let's start an Android rage hashtag, except that it didn't exactly go that way. People proceeded to start a Windows rage hashtag and talk about all the things they hated about Windows 8. This Neat. Is probably something
painfully that, funny.
Oh, it is hilarious.
Or
except if you're
painful or something.
Yes,
you kind of would think they would have known better.
Well, things we wish we hadn't done.
Where memes happen, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you kind of watch.
Did they, What happened, though? I mean, seriously, did they sit down in their meetings and say, we think this would be a good idea? Nobody saw this coming? I don't know. That one boggles my mind.
Well, first you would have to sit down and think of what the engagement or the interest would be in Windows Phone, which may not be very huge to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
But every company has its fanboys or rabid fans. It doesn't matter. There are still people who are dyed-in-the-wool BlackBerry fans who won't give it up. There are people who are dyed-in-the-wool Nokia fans, and they will love their N82 forever until it falls apart in their hands. There are still people who will really believe in a platform, and those are people that you think you can help in a social media drive. What may not be you're ready for is the united dislike from a certain segment of the internet, as snarky as it likes to be, that you gave them a platform to then turn around and say, see, this is embodies everything that we dislike about this. You're going after this brand because you believe yourself to be better, when really, honestly, you're just as bad, if not worse, in our opinion. Here's a bunch of hashtags why. And it's social media when it rebounds on you. And this happened, New Coke. Anybody remember New Coke?
Oh, Coke Classic? Can we not?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, let's forget that Coke, New Coke ever existed.
That's the whole Cola Wars thing. And that actually happened as we came out of the Pepsi Challenge and people not knowing the difference between Pepsi and Coke and the height of the Cola Wars. So you would do these kind of attack ads, especially during the Super Bowl, and they would either get really popular or they would just make you look really shallow. And it's negative ad campaigns. Ha ha. But yeah, it can boomerang.
We have an article here begging people to please use good passwords. Why don't we do this better? Because it's work and we don't want to have to work. We want it to just happen for us. And you may have to be creative and come up with a password that may not be easily hacked and maybe actually store it somewhere safe or remember it. It's a lot of work. I don't want to do that.
This article really caught my interest.
Yeah.
Because gosh, this is a long story. I will try and do something really unprecedented for me and make it shorter. I used to keep my passwords in a note taker. I have since sold the note taker that I had because I found that I did not need it like I did when I was on the road doing rehab teaching. So then the passwords were in my contacts. So I would have, for example, a contact labeled Skype. And then I would have it in notes, but it doesn't always read well in notes on the iPhone. And it was also a situation where when you only had one or two passwords to remember, it was no big deal.
Right.
I would guess, just without even doing any kind of counting, that I've now got about 30. And so if I forget my password, I think, okay, did I use this or this or this variation? Or did I capitalize it or not?
Mm-hmm.
And just this past weekend, I downloaded a password manager for the computer. I have a 30-day trial, and there's also an iPhone app. And I did purchase the app because I'm pretty sure that I'm going to go with this on my computer as well. But even if I just had them in reliable form on my phone so that I could look them up, and it will also generate passwords that are more secure. So, I mean, some of the ones I have, I think, are very good. And some of them, well, I feel like they would be fairly easy to guess or fairly easy to hack. And the more I hear, the less comfortable I am with that. I forget the context. I think, Joe, it was you earlier this week who mentioned Matt Honan. And I guess what happened to him and how easily he was taken
Through
really
Amazon.
Stuck in my mind.
Yeah, they got him through Amazon and social media the rest.
Yeah, but I mean, can you see, like, this guy is doing his Christmas shopping in a brick and mortar store and he hands over his credit card and they say, oh, I know you. You know, his name will live in infamy, yeah. But it's also a good reminder.
Yeah. And in fact, that is the most dangerous thing than anything else online at times, is to hand your card to somebody, especially at a restaurant or something like that. And we're not trying to scare anybody, but you know, that's the moment where people can take pictures of your credit card or, you know, scan it really quick. Or
people say, I only will order over the phone. I won't order online. And I've wanted to say in a couple situations I have, well, what do you think precisely that they are doing with your card. They're putting it into a computer.
Yeah, which could possibly be online. It's entirely possible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it always keeps everybody on target. And all what you can do is try and minimize the problem. You can't necessarily all the time keep everything out of reach or you know, you do what you can, but, you know, Bank of America has that data. So if Bank of America gets hit, well, it wasn't anything you did. So the best thing you can do is not have passwords like 12345 or, you know, the first name of your first pet or, you know, things.
Or your birthday.
Right.
Or,
things that are easily looked up or somebody can know about you, because social hacks still work the best. More than anything else. And so if you don't have a strong password, and the article talks a little bit about that, and you can find it at the show notes at serotech.com, the ease of access to the information is made a lot better because it was something that they were able to guess about you. And even going to your Facebook page and looking at things that you post most often can actually lead a lot of people to make guesswork. It happens to celebrities all the time. Paris Hilton and all of that, because she had something that was about her and because she's so much in the press, somebody was able to sit down and kind of figure out what her typical password might be. And poof. Mm.
So Lisa, what is said product that you...
The one that I got was 1Password. I've heard good things about 1Password and LastPass or LastPassword. There's a free password app, but it's for the iPhone only. That's called My Eyes Only, for what it's worth. But there are several out there. The thing I liked about 1Password is that you can use it on your iPhone, your Android device, on Mac or on Windows, or combinations of those.
I need to check it. I keep saying that, and I haven't played with it, but now you've kind of spurred me to go ahead and download it and take a look at it.
And you want to check out this article that we have here in the show notes, too, for a Twitter SMS bug that was kind of nasty. Remember that when you link other accounts to accounts, you know, people can kind of get a free ride. That's what happened to Matt Honan, as we discussed before, where they used his Amazon to get to his Gmail. Once when they got to his Gmail, they got to his Apple ID and remotely wiped his iDevices and his Mac. So when you tie a lot of your stuff together, like to Facebook or to Twitter, if they can get behind Twitter or Facebook, then get to the rest of the stuff. So there was a vulnerability found out here in using, you know, SMS to, you know, to text message a tweet. So, you know, that's kind of a problem. It gets kind of complicated, so you definitely want to check out the show notes for that article. Simple messaging system, one of those great kind of abbreviations. And it is a little different than things. And it gets even more cluttered because Facebook is doing Facebook Messenger, where they can do it through your phone. And remember, iMessage is a little different than a traditional SMS. So it gets a little crazy on what a message is, what a tweet is. I know that's kind of crazy. And that's why, you know, we have these articles in the show notes so people can kind of learn how these, you know, or you know what, that one you posted last week, Jamie, of all those different tech terms. That's a great one, too.
Oh, yes.
That's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a super resource.
So I've been reading this Disney War book, as I've been talking about, probably going to end up as an EOL book. And it didn't shock me this week to see that Disney is partnering up with Netflix. And starting in 2016, they're going to have a lot of movies and titles exclusively on Netflix. And stream them from there. And the reason why it doesn't surprise me, especially after the Star Wars thing recently, which, by the way, that would mean that only Star Wars movies would be on Netflix and Clone Wars and things like that. That's going to be interesting. Is that in the book, they were so good at detailing how bad Disney was at online and how that was not something they were prepared for. And it took them a long time to understand computers because they were such an old media company. And it's really interesting. The book, unfortunately, on Audible is one of the worst edited audiobooks I have ever read. I don't know if I'll be able to recommend this fully, but I mean, like, the guy retakes half a sentence and then they pick up again and it's like a different tone before. And everything on the sentence. Like, they didn't add out.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like, real big, like, when he read the book, and I was like, oh, good grief.
Yep.
That was kind of a jarring moment there. It kind of took me out of
it. I actually read one time where you could hear the narrator say, strike that, and she went back and they didn't edit it
out of the
that.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
That's crazy. but it shows again that Disney is really, really rebranding themselves from things and mistakes they had made all the way back in 2002 and 2003. And it's interesting because Steve Jobs says, you know, as long as I'm at Pixar, I will never do a deal with Michael Eisner until he's gone and turned into our almost proxy fight. But anyway, it really shows how Disney loves to have control of their content. And by putting it on Netflix, what happens is that they could decide to retire a movie for several years. And if people stop buying DVDs and Blu-rays and all of that, where does it live, right? Unless you know somebody who has a videotape, and if they've killed it from YouTube, minus some places like the Pirate Bay, but this is Disney saying, look, we'll have it and we'll air it, but we'll air it only from this month to this month, because Disney used to make a lot of their movies off of what was called moratorium, and they would retire a movie after, you know, a few months of it being out there and save it for 7 years for the next generation. That was very big into what Disney did. In fact, DivX, this book doesn't talk about DivX, but DivX was a Disney-backed version of DVD where you rented it, but you played it like two or three times and it would just self-terminate. It would erase itself. So Disney going to Netflix, along with the purchasing of Marvel and Pixar and Star Wars, is them getting back to creativity and owning our big icons and then putting them away until it's time to bring them back out again and charge you some more money to see them. So very interesting stuff, I thought.
Well, coming up after the break, we have the mailbag, and in our roundabout segment this week, a foolproof fix for Apple Maps and robots waiting on you in a restaurant? Really? That's all coming up right here on Serotalk Podcast 134.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Filets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Serotalk 134, and it is that time again for us to get in the way of the ever-growing mailbag. Okay, well, there's lots of stuff here, but really one thing kind of jumped out at us this week, and don't think that we don't read all your letters at resources@serotalk.com, all your iReports, all the blog comments, all that stuff. We do.
Absolutely.
We read the Twitters, all that stuff.
Yep.
But check out this feedback from Rob Dittman from our holiday special.
Hi, guys, in Serotalk land. This is Rob Dittman, off the roof this time, but there we go. I'm looking for one of my cats because I wanted to ask their opinion on Ricky's use of the litter robot. I think that is way cool, and I think I want one. But I need to, let's see, are you in here? No, you're not in there. Are you in here? No, you're not in there. Okay. Ah, yes, found one. Okay. This is one of my cats. This is Esther. Hello, Esther. How are you? Are you having fun? Are you having a good day today? Okay. Well, hello, my friend. So I just had to say, because this was absolutely funny, and I thought it was really funny, when you said, let's hear the unit cycle through, all I could picture is a cat, you know, do-do-do-do-do, meow, and then, you know, so like I really thought you were going to go through the whole deal and have a whole cycle go through. But that's not what happened. So anyway, how my warped mind works, whether you use it or not, I really hope you guys laugh at this iReport and have a great day.
Well, Rob, as a cat owner, cat lover, I appreciate the fact that you consult your pets on purchases that you would make for them, because it is important. They do have a voice and they should be allowed to make choices. It's just my passionate rant on taking care of cats. So now you know that I'm a little unhinged. I mean, that I have thoughts along those lines.
Yeah, and if you listen to EOL, there's an extra in which I talk about my dog watching television. He loves high-definition television and Doctor Who. So if you listen to End of Line, the extra about Doctor Who Series 7, spoilers, you'll hear a lot about my dog and how he enjoys television. I'm not kidding. Like Hidalgo, anything with horses. I can't watch Game of Thrones or anything because he gets very excited about livestock being on his television. It literally is the dog TV. I don't get to choose anymore. He kind of sort of has the remote.
Mm. And it's pretty sad that you allow it. And I do too.
I know. I should actually be more monitoring and probably put on the parental advisory controls, you know, to keep probably him from watching, you know, some channels that, like Animal Planet, you know, I should probably limit that down to about an hour a day, possibly, who knows.
It's Animal Cops, you can't let him watch that where they are very mean good point. To animals. Mm-hmm. No.
But as far as giving pets control, all I can say is, let him who is without sin throw the first bone.
Oh, wow. Nice. We hadn't had a good pun in a long time. I'll let you know when one comes here.
I was channeling Richard.
Oh, yeah, I can tell. Yeah. Who you can hear on our holiday podcast. If you haven't, remember, you can back up into the archives there in iBlink Radio or head on over to ZeroTalk.com and listen to our holiday special where our staff recommends gifts that you could pick for the holidays. And it works out really, really well if you're not sure what to get that one person. And listen to how many people on staff have so many good ideas. And it's not all tech stuff. That's the cool thing is that I review some containers. And it's very strange for me to actually talk about things that don't beep, flash, and talk. It's very weird. But check out that wonderful holiday special.
Batteries. Yeah. Resources at serotalk.com. I report on iBlink Radio on Android or iPhone. We'd love to hear from you. Coming up in a couple of weeks, we have our holiday feedback special. Just your voices. Well, maybe us a little bit, but mostly you all. That's coming up in just a couple of weeks right here on the Serotalk Podcast Network. Coming up next, it's time for Roundabout. Well, as I mentioned, Apple has a foolproof way to fix its maps debacle, and that is to change the geography of planet Earth. I think it's brilliant.
They've got enough money to do it.
Yeah, they do. This is from The Onion, right?
Yeah.
This is where that came from.
And if you're not familiar with The Onion is real fake news. By that, I mean they make fake news, but it's in real headline form. So people actually can be tricked.
It sounds so real that people believe it.
Yeah. People have been tricked by Onion headlines before in which they thought it was real news. There's some doozies out there. But this is a great article that talks about how Apple could just fix all their map problems if they actually could do some planetary realignment.
What's funny is if they could, they would.
Yeah, like move Baltimore into the middle of the ocean.
Baltimore
and
is no Atlantis.
You that you like it.
That's right.
Yeah, right. You really wanted this change. We know you did.
You never even realized that it would be so much better until we did it.
Yes.
That's right.
Great.
Indeed.
Great stuff. But, you know, it doesn't solve Ricky's Samantha problem.
No, it does not.
No.
At all.
You know how much she endures. I wanted to say like, but I know that she'll hit me later. Say endures, yeah. Samantha.
Really funny, though, because I have Samantha on the phone, on my Victor Reader stream, and on the Kindle. And it sounds enough alike that you can tell it's Samantha, but sometimes it has to do with speaker quality. And I forget who, but somebody gave me the best suggestion I ever heard for dealing with Samantha on the stream. And that was to take the pitch up one or two notches too much, and she sounds squeaky, and you want to throw the thing again. But one or two puts it into a more moderate range, makes it sound not quite so obnoxious, I think.
Funny, because someone told me once that if you sped up Neo Speech Kate, that it sounded like a girlfriend that he had once that would always chew him out, that she always sounds a little a little bit more curt if you sped up Kate. And I've never been able to shake that ever since. Now that someone had said it, it's like, wow, she does sound kind of aggressive, I guess. Not happy.
Yeah.
Beats Julie by a mile.
Oh, Neo's beach Julie is fun. The, nice, Julie.
I can feel the hate mail coming. No, Julie sounds like she needs to be slapped. She's like the prima donna cheerleading queen in high school, flipping her hair around, who everybody tried to suck up to but secretly hated her. And maybe that should all be edited. I'm not sure we have room for the mail that would
Julie's
generate.
Upbeat. Julie will say, like,
Julie
will say the most horrible things, but do it in such a happy way. Like, you owe money. You know, oh, wow.
That,
yeah, I can take that a little better now that Julie's put it in such a positive light. It's the power of positive thinking. I enjoy Julie. Julie's nice.
Maybe I just need to try Julie in the afternoon. Julie pre-coffee is a bit hard to take.
Well, if you
have... How about Julie with a glass of wine? Julie with that a might glass work of too. Wine.
If you've never played with Julie, you can. She's one of the voices that are available with System Access. You can get that as a 7-day trial by heading over to satogo.com. That's SATOGO.com. Play with her on SamNet. Wait, now look what needs to be edited. Use Julie on SamNet.
And go clear back to my wine comment and kill the whole thing right there.
I have both hands over my face trying to stifle my laughter. If you've never played with Julie, give it a try. Well,
play with Julie.
You guys got a preview of the outtake show of 2012 in a Sero Talk, no less. This is what happens when we're recording the last parts of the podcast. But you know what would be funny, though, is that a robot would have Julie's voice and be Ricky's representative for her congressional district. That would be kind of funny.
She's going to kill you while you sleep.
There's this...
Not the robot, Ricky.
Right. The reason we keep talking about robots and obsessing about them here is because there is a robotic hand that is being worked on that is... I guess sensitive enough or calibrated enough or whatever term you want to use to actually hold a glass of wine and not break it. I just read that article and thought that's kind of cool and surely we could do something with it here on Sero Talk, not knowing that we would just absolutely completely demolish the whole story and it really probably doesn't even fit anymore. But it is about robots and Ricky does like robots and she will be listening to this. So
it's actually really fascinating in a sense because you need to, if you're, for example, holding a wine glass, you need to have enough pressure, enough strength to hold it without crushing it.
Yeah.
And they said that in the article that they had it holding everything from a wine glass to a cardboard tube, you know, without crushing it. So it's really kind of fascinating. I mean, I think we take for granted all these things. Well, sure, I can hold that. I can do that. But then you try to duplicate them in technology and you see really kind of how amazing they are.
Well, and if you're going to have people with artificial limbs, you know, they have to know the difference between shaking your hand and then breaking every bone in your hand. And, you know, and that will carry over to autonomous vehicles, you know, between driving and knowing space and relationships and pounds per square inch and pressure and when to hit the brakes. It's just fascinating for me to realize how dumb I am in the world because I suck at math. But, you know, there's a lot of math involved with what these robots are doing, and it really is neat, and it will have so many benefits for us in the future to be able to have these things because this kind of control then linked with our brains will help when we get to making artificial eyes if that's what you're into in that you are waiting for eyes to, you know, be what Geordi had on, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation. So it all does play back into itself. And it too, like the mobile space, is moving pretty rapidly and it's pretty exciting.
Well, I think we have probably talked enough for one day. And I think it's time to let our listeners have their say, and I'm sure they will. I'd like to thank Lisa for joining us today. It's always fun to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
Especially after you have done a Serospectives the night before, and people do need to check that out. This month in Tech for November, we had some great guests. Of course, Steve Zazen hosting and Lisa as producer. Shane Jackson was there. Has Shane ever been on a Serospectives before?
No, not that I
know
of.
I don't think so.
I didn't think
so. Nor its former tech chat either.
Nor Myrna.
Yeah, very good.
Right.
Yeah, Myrna Voda was also with us. And she's a longtime techie who also brought a lot of experience. And they were both new, I believe, to that particular format. So certainly come hear what they have to say.
We had some environmental challenges in that show, some background things that happened that, you know what, when you do a live show and you have guests from all different parts of the country with different setups of all types, you just never know quite what's going to happen. And that is, in my opinion, part of the fun of Serospectives. Of course, I'm not in Lisa's position producing it, so I can think it's fun.
So what you're saying is that you're going to get Lisa some antacids for Christmas, and
I'm going to buy her a robotic hand and a really good bottle of wine.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening, and stick around because next week we'll have another podcast, and then after that, the following week, our feedback special. So until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.